Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm Dennis Wu, and it's the Memorial Day holiday. Originally scheduled was an episode with David McQueen and two of his associates talking about personal massage therapy, the therapeutic benefits of having massage therapy, and so we've had to preempt it until next week. We've had requests, though, for this particular encore presentation of El Paso Primetime, with a juvenile OBGYN and guest host Nomi Rojas. Actually, she's one of the hosts of El Paso Primetime. And they sit and have frank talk about the new puberty. This is an episode that you'll want to listen to if you're a parent, grandparent, or if you have someone in your family who's going through it.
Good afternoon, Dennis. My name is Nomi Rojas. For those of you who don't know me, I am the former editor now of Synapse. It's the region's life sciences news digest. I am moving on to a new job in the engineering world, but I intend to come back once in a while with some medical guests. Today, I am very excited to bring an OBGYN to the microphone to talk about pediatric and adolescent gynecology. We have Dr. Sarisha Reddy. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me today, Noemi and Dennis.
So let me just ask you about normal puberty, because I do want to get into eventually the things that can happen with periods and how puberty can come earlier than maybe expected. It's mm-hmm. something that I'm dealing with personally with my 8-year-old. So Dr. Reddy, can you tell us puberty, what is normal, quote unquote, puberty?
So normal puberty can mean quite a few things. Most of us, when we think about puberty in terms of young girls or adolescents, we tend to think of it as just the period. But it's actually a whole host of other things that we look for, and we talk about it as being part of growing up. And one of the first things that happens and that we notice when kids are growing up is the fact that they have a growth spurt. And that's a very important aspect that tells you that the body is becoming active, and it's becoming active from a perspective of physical growth, but also internally, meaning there are hormones that are being released. The brain is very active at that point. And internally, there are organs that are also growing, too, that add to that puberty aspect.
When you say growth spurt, I mean, children grow fast. I mean, they grow out of their clothes and shoes. You have to shop almost monthly for because they're growing. So what's normal growth and a growth spurt?
So you may notice when you go to the pediatrician, and you probably did when you first took your infant, the first thing the pediatrician has been doing is taking a weight and a height. And most of us take those things for granted. But as you notice, if you follow the same pediatrician, which is sort of important over the whole course of a child's life, if you can kind of keep it consistent, is that they're plotting that growth of the weight and the height on a chart. Ask next time when you go to the pediatrician to see that height and weight chart. It's because it's really interesting, because there are curves out there that are federal government. For example, the Centers for Disease Control have what's a normal growth curve and what's on the lower limit and what's on the upper limit. So your child may be perfectly fine in terms of being on the height, but perhaps on the weight, maybe a little bit more than it should be, or maybe a little less, which can sort of tell us, are there things going on? So if your child is at the 10th percentile of a weight of her age, then she was perfectly normal on. She was at the 50th percentile, maybe just slightly below, you know there's been a significant drop. So you can start looking for things. Are there malabsorption disorders, et cetera, that are going on? Same thing for height. So all of a sudden, the height starts to become stunted, or you notice a large increase in height.
I know that there's a trend. I know it's a national trend. I don't know if it's global, but girls are going through puberty earlier, and some boys are too, as I understand, but it's particularly prevalent in girls. Like I said, my 7-year-old has always been tall for her age, so that never really, her height never really concerned me, but it was, she had a growth spurt like you're talking about, but it was at 7, so this was, that's earlier than what people can should expect from normal puberty, right?
Right. There have been some really interesting epidemiological studies that have been done in the past 150 years, believe it or not. We have some of that data. And since we've become an industrialized nation, we've noticed that the pubertal trends for girls especially have sort of dropped from, you know, it was an average of 13.5 to now being about 13.1 to even a little bit less than that. So we may have, with our better nutrition, with perhaps increased nutritional intake, and there's been some studies, maybe even environmental factors, that we've perhaps our children are getting into puberty at a younger age than they had been 70, 80 years ago.
And when you say environmental, you're talking about like maybe the antibiotics that chickens are raised on? Or is that what you're talking about?
Well, there have been a few studies, but nothing absolutely causally linking. But there have been a few few studies that looked at outbreaks of earlier puberty. For example, there was an incidence of young girls having episodes of vaginal bleeding, 7, 8, even younger than that. And when they looked at the cluster of these girls, they were found near pesticide plants. And some of these pesticides had looked as if they were they weren't hormonally related, but certainly some of the chemicals that were being released into the environment could behave very similar to hormones that could initiate puberty.
So you work in a clinic. Is it the Texas Tech Clinic?
Yes, I actually work at Texas Tech Health Science Center in the Department of OBGYN. And for the past 20 years, I have focused most of my clinical career around treating young girls and pediatric and in the adolescent age group.
And have you found that it's becoming more common that parents have to take their young girl to go see an OBGYN earlier now?
Well, you know, it's like anything else. What came first? You know, it's a good thing when we have a focus. Most of these girls were in these vast no man's land. No one really got trained to treat these girls. So they would go to the pediatricians, who some are very experienced, but it felt uncomfortable treating gynecological conditions. And then there were gynecologists who felt uncomfortable with treating a younger population. So, you know, one is not the same. A 5-year-old is not a 10-year-old, is not a 12-year-old. And believe it or not, gynecological conditions can happen even at infancy. So, so now we have a relatively young subspecialty, which it's not recognized quite yet as a specialty. There are some fellowships, quite a handful of them throughout the country that do train pediatric and adolescent gynecology. And in the past, it was actually a few physicians who chose to specialize, and it grew out of through London, England, and a small group of physicians who then bridged across the United States. And when I first went to my society meeting 20 years ago, there were 150. It's a very small meeting in comparison to our national OBGYN meeting, which you'll see thousands of physicians. So even now, the society is small. It's about 500 physicians, but it's grown.
In the world?
In the society.
Okay.
In North American Society for Pediatric and Adolescent Gynecology. It is an international organization. There is an international society. Maybe you can add a few hundred more physicians who have an interest in TDAM, but certainly not to the extent that we would like it to be.
In El Paso, are you the only pediatric and adolescent gynecologist?
A colleague, Dr. Melissa Mendez, also has an interest in this area and also has been treating and taking care of patients.
That's amazing. I wanted to go back to the growth spurt thing. I mean, I didn't even have to look at her pediatric growth chart. I mean, it just seemed like one morning, nothing fit her.
Exactly.
Her school uniforms, her panties, and when I went to the store to buy her new clothes, she had grown by two. She skipped a couple of sizes.
Right.
I couldn't believe it.
Right.
And so, and then she, you know, there are some other signs of puberty besides
right.
the menstrual cycle, like you said, and one of the things that I noticed was body odor, pungent. I mean, I can almost call it like an oniony smell. And so I don't know if there are any parents or grandparents out there listening that can relate to this smell, but I smelled it one day. She was sitting right next to me and I didn't know what this smell was. I was looking around to see who was near me and I realized it was her.
Right.
But other signs would also be like acne.
Right. And you might notice hair growth too. You know, we were talking about the growth curve and the plotting of the growth curve, and what it looks like is an S. You know, it starts at the bottom tail end, and, you know, when you draw an S, it's, you know, kind of flattened out, maybe a little bit of a slope, but then the scoop of the S sort of increases. You know, it has a bigger slope or a tighter slope, and then you notice then the S kind of plateaus out on the top.
Okay.
And the growth spurt that you're talking about is that linear part of the S where it has a greater slope to it. And then when we finish growing, we sort of plateau out. That's the top part. And that slope can be different for different kids. You know, so what you notice, what you've noticed is that she's reaching that slope. But yes, is she on the younger end? We have actually scales out there that say what's normal and what's not normal. And we have to take into consideration family history. We have to take in consideration our genetics, meaning, you know, some, most kids will follow their mom, sort of, generally. But their weight also makes a general influence. So most of the time, if the kids are little heavier than they should be, they may play a role in their when their onset of puberty, or they're a lot more active. They do 2 or 3 hours of physical activity per day. It might actually delay their puberty a bit. So you start to see these things that may play a role. But generally, we have trends of when we start to look for pubertal growth.
Okay. Like I said, she was 7, and mm-hmm. Yeah, she had the underarm hair, she had the pubic hair, and mm-hmm. she was only 7.
Right.
And so that's when I kind of accidentally bumped mm-hmm. into you and met you mm-hmm. at a meeting,
mm-hmm.
and I asked you about it, and I'm glad that I bumped into you, and so now she's gone through several tests, blood tests, mm-hmm. urine tests. She had an X-ray of her hand to look at her bones,
mm-hmm.
And it did show that her plates, I guess, are mm-hmm. forming.
Right.
And so that means that even though she's super tall now,
mm-hmm.
if her bones continue to fuse, then she maybe has one more year left of growth. And so she may end up being short later in life.
So you brought up something, a really good point. And if I have a chance to counsel parents, and I find that this is a really good important, you were very astute in noticing your daughter, meaning not just assuming that that's just the way they are. You know, is this early? Is this not early? Is this supposed to be normal? She's an 8-year-old and she has a pungent underarm odor. And you know that you were thinking in your own terms, when did I start using deodorant? When did mom tell me that, you know, I'm going to be growing up? And it might have been 10 years old for you.
Yeah,
and
so, I think it was 11.
11, yeah. Even. And so So that's a really good point about parents sort of noticing, not being overtly cautious, but certainly paying attention to some of these growth elements and sort of looking up online or asking the pediatrician at the next visit, you know, what's supposed to be in the normal? Is she fitting? So looking at the growth chart, it's perfectly acceptable to ask your pediatrician, where does her height fall? Where does her weight fall? And what they would do at that point is look at you, the mom, look at her father, and guesstimate where she would be and where she would fall on that growth curve. So if you were small and your husband was small, maybe she would be on the smallish side. So we would know where she would be trending towards. So that's a good point. And so I have to give kudos to you because you actually sought me out to ask that question. And because of that, we might be investigating things that could have a solution earlier or at least make an attempt towards a solution as well.
Yes. And since this is a trend, or I've been reading it's a trend, I'm thinking to myself, if it's such a trend, why don't I hear more parents talking about it? And so I'm trying to, you know, get this on the air now and maybe just make parents aware, grandparents aware that girls and some boys are going through puberty earlier. And so now I'm at the point now where I have to decide whether or not to put her through this treatment. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's my Hispanic culture or what it is, but the treatment at first sounded great to me and I wanted to move forward. But then when I thought I had a few more days to think about it, I kind of was on the fence about it, thinking, do I really want to mess around with my daughter's natural growth, the natural order of her body? But there was something that you said that made me feel better. You said that sometimes our bodies do things that are not natural.
Right. And even though it may be something her body wants to do or something has stimulated the body, there could be a whole host of things that aren't necessarily normal that could be initiating these things, causing her to do something earlier than what she's doing. Now, if she was 9 years old, 9.5, and she was trending and we couldn't find anything and she was just a little bit below the growth curve, absolutely. No one would recommend treatment, maybe to follow, maybe repeat the blood test. But, you know, there are simple conditions, perhaps hypothyroidism. You know, you start to notice kids maybe gaining a little weight more than she should. Looks like she has earlier pubertal development. And actually she's hypothyroid. And some simple treatment with thyroid medication. So you could say, yes, her body was going through it naturally, but it wasn't a natural condition. Not, you know, 8-year-olds wouldn't be hypothyroid generally. There are more serious conditions, certainly. You could have an intracranial tumor that could be causing some sort of odd stimulation of the ovaries. The ovaries could have a tumor causing you know, this estrogen stimulation and production. So there are things that can happen that should be investigated to make sure that those aren't interfering. And then there's the most common cause is we can't really find a reason. And in those situations, there has to be some negotiation of how much we need to do to help her out. Please bye.
There's a book that's been out there that actually fueled this entire conversation called The New Puberty. And on a recent episode with Fresh Air and Terry Gross and their conversation, they intimated, the two authors, these two gynecologists, intimated that there's a possibility with this new puberty that's happening in their longitudinal study, that there could be physical ramifications later on in their lives as they get older.
Yes.
What are we talking about here?
So a couple of the issues with having puberty earlier means some of these natural hormones that our body makes, we have longer exposure time. So, you know, it's part of our bodies, and there's, I don't want to say there's no way to disrupt it. There are ways to disrupt it. But you can see that longer exposure of hormones for longer periods of time at greater doses can certainly stimulate your breasts, can certainly stimulate the lining of your uterus. So we're talking about perhaps increasing your risk for breast cancer, perhaps increasing your risk for endometrial cancer. We do know that if you have longer exposures of estrogen, perhaps that would be the case. So that's what we're talking about. More ovulatory cycles certainly could increase your risk for ovarian cancer if you're already at risk for it. Mm-hmm. So these longer exposures of hormones is what they're talking about. Now, when you talk about longer exposure of hormones, it also means your weight changes a bit with our nutrition. So if you have longer exposure and you're heavier, you can talk, you're now thinking about a whole host of other epidemiological things, for example, heart disease. And so we have certain conditions now that sort of mimic a little bit of that, and that's the polycystic ovary syndrome. And although with polycystic ovary syndrome, it's not necessarily tied with early puberty, most of the kids look heavier, but they may actually have less menstrual cycles, although their hormonal exposure may predispose them to all the things I just talked about.
Mm. So can you talk to us through the experience in your clinic and at your practice? Tell us about the period, the menstrual cycle, and the different types I understand there are.
So one of the first things that when I see kids and they say, oh, my periods are irregular or my periods are not supposed to be the way they are, is finding a history of their menstrual cycles. And this is a great day and age for kids because most of the kids have cell phones and there are some great apps out there for keeping track of your menstrual calendar. In fact, the kids who use those know when they ovulate, know what their periods are supposed to be like, and it's a terrific thing. Plus, it makes them much more aware of their body. It's an interesting thing, exercise for them to go through. But what we normally think of the 28 to 30 day cycle that happens, maybe lasting about 5 to 6 days, where the first 2 to 3 days would be heavy, I counsel most of these kids on that, on what's supposed to be a normal menstrual cycle. So when somebody who comes in the first year tells me, I had a cycle, but I didn't have one 2 months ago, or it seemed to happen to happen every 2 months, I usually say, well, there's studies out there that say in the first 1.5 to 2 years of your life, your cycles can be anywhere from 20 to 90 days. So already they go, oh, so I'm normal. I'm like, yes, you're normal. And it'll start to change. So you'll notice that that interval between each cycle starts to decrease. Or some of the kids say, but I've been bleeding 10 days and I feel really tired. And now we start to think about working those kids up for something different.
Is there anything that you would like to say before we're done? We only have about a minute left. Anything I haven't asked or that you want parents to know?
So I think we touched on the highlights. I think that paying attention to some of these subtle factors of when kids start having the breast development and when they start having a little pubic hair development and a little bit of the body odor, and certainly reassuring kids that these are normal parts rather than just letting them happen. So this is a good time. There are quite a few books out there that, you know, written for kids that even parents can learn a lot from. And perhaps even find out perhaps this isn't normal, and being able to address those things with the child and then address it with the pediatrician. I would say be assertive when you go to the pediatrician's office about looking at those weight and height charts. And certainly, you know, making sure that your children have adequate nutrition and exercise to promote a happy, healthy puberty too. And then the last piece is once a child has gone through puberty and is menstruating, keeping a track of those menstrual cycles and then constantly being alert with your child, maybe not invasive, but certainly alert is a very important thing. So one of my friends, I thought it was really funny after she instructed her after her daughter had her period, which happened all of a sudden while she was at a school trip, you know, and she was like, you know, she's a physician. She was like, what was I thinking? I should have known she was having breast development. I knew this was happening, and I should have prepped her beforehand, had her kind of prepare, maybe have her take things. And her daughter came back to her and said, how could you not tell me this was going to happen to me? So it's kind of interesting that, you know, you don't have to be a physician. We're not expecting these things to happen. So just being aware and letting your child know that these might be some of the things that might happen in the future.
Thank you so much, Dr. Reddy, for coming and talking to us. It's a complicated topic, but I thought it was important, especially for parents, to just be looking and being aware and asking questions.
I agree. You know, our social determinants certainly say that we should be more educated and also educate our kids because you were talking about birth control, but having your kids understand what having your menstrual cycle means is a part of a reproductive life as well. Mm-hmm. So we talked about medical conditions that affect periods, but, you know, there are a whole host of other things that kids need to be aware of and safe about, and the periods and its impact on reproductive health as well.
And we didn't even talk about boys.
No,
that's
we didn't.
That's a whole other couple of shows.
So, Mikasa Tsukasa, we'd love to have you back, and let's start. Actually, we should actually start thinking about doing a series on this because we have grandparents listening who are now caretakers, because parents sometimes get into such a hectic lifestyle, they can't do an adequate job on their own.
I would love to. I would love to address the whole aspect of adolescent reproductive health. Kids may be having normal menstrual cycles, but their brains are active, their lives are dynamic, they're having boyfriends, and addressing their sexuality and their reproductive health is just as important.
Absolutely. So let's count on having you back, and we'll do more shows.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nomi Rojas, for this incredible idea to do this on the radio and to bring such a wonderful personality into our lives.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you, listeners, for listening to this edition of El Paso Primetime. The preparation for re-airing episode 1505 was edited by Deidre Westenhauser. Next week, we'll sit and talk with members of the Edge of Texas chapter of the American Massage Therapy Association. Coming up next is Louis Signs and Perspectives. Have a great Memorial Day weekend.